Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. Right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Megan, a movie that I have been so excited about. You guys know that I'm a big Malignant fan, so I've been excited for whatever Akilah Cooper was going to come up with next. And this thing rocks, and we had so much fun talking about it. Joining me today is actually Josh Rubin, filmmaker and actor Josh Rubin, and it was such an honor to have him on the show. We had a great time talking about this movie, and great conversation coming up, lots of great puzzle pieces. Before we get to it, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You could also, of course, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, wherever it is you're listening. There's probably a 5-star button, and we'd appreciate it if you clicked it. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And most of all, we're just happy you're out there listening. So continue listening. We got a lot of episodes coming your way. This is the first 2023 film that we're covering. We still have a bunch of 2022 movies to post, as well as a couple more wrap-ups of 2022 as well coming, a couple special episodes. I'm excited about all these 2023 movies. We've got a lot to cover, so thanks for being out there. Let's talk about Megan. All right, we're finally talking Megan. This movie is such a blast, and I think has been on a lot of people's most anticipated lists of the year, which is funny because it's the first week of the year and we're already getting to it. But we're here now, and joining us is Josh Rubin, filmmaker and actor. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm excited to talk about this movie. I had so much fun with it. And I knew from that first trailer, you know, especially, I don't know, are you a big Malignant guy? I certainly am.
Oh, I completely am. I'm just a big Akilah Cooper fan in general, yeah. Though I haven't seen, I think it was The Nun that she worked on, some of her Star Trek stuff. But the fact that she is like knocking them out one after the other with these kind of original horror films, I'm just I want to be friends with this writer.
Yeah, I completely agree. Akilah Cooper, Hive, rise up. She is absolutely rocking it with these just over the top wacky horror movies. But before we get too far into Megan, it's your first time on the show. Why don't you tell our listeners about you and what you do?
Well, you said it best. I'm a filmmaker, although I guess I do or try to do more than just one thing. This circus life wouldn't have it any other way unless you really hit the lottery. So I'm a producer and a writer and an actor, too. I'm known probably originally for my work at College Humor, which is now called Dropout. But I have two horror films that I've made right in the heart of the pandemic, or at least released that way. One was called Scare Me with Ive Cash and Chris Redd, and myself, and the other one is called Werewolves Within with Sam Richardson and Lana Weintraub and Harvey Guillen and a whole incredible ensemble of actors. And I was just recently in a film called The Wounded Fawn by Travis Stevens, and produced and co-starred in another called Blood Relatives, both of which are on Shudder.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of great stuff there, and I'm very excited to have you here today. So You know, obviously, I have a feeling you're a big fan of the horror comedy as like a side genre of horror. It seems like it a lot of what you do in there. And it's such a fun kind of like fertile ground. I think part of the conversation, and I'm sure we'll get to it with some of our puzzle pieces possibly and like talking throughout it, but this being PG-13 horror and leaning into the comedy aspect, I mean, personally, I'm a huge horror comedy fan, and I as much as I love, you know, the gore and, you know, all that kind of stuff too, as long as the movie is, you know, creating a fun time for the viewers, it's a good time.
If you can nail it tonally, you're golden. When you know, you get caught trying to be funny, or when people take swings and they miss, you know, once, twice, three times in a row, it can be super rough. I think you kind of have to be born with that sense of humor, at least that timing in your bones. Translating it sometimes, that's another thing, you know, working with the technician, working with an editor, and other filmmakers to kind of make sure you nail it. You have to be like, you know, filmically proficient for sure, but you really do have to be a, you know, comedic person, or at least have a comic sensibility. Yeah. You can see that in Jordan Peele's work for sure. You can see it. I mean, you know, you can imagine how funny in real life Joe Dante must be, just dating it back, sure, you know, there, or even Tim Burton. You know, Ivan Reitman was a very funny dude. He was, you know, producing horror films and also with Ghostbusters, which is what I consider at least gateway horror. But yeah, when it's nailed, just as I think Gerard Johnstone did it with Megan, it hits all sides of the palette in such an exciting way. I mean, right from the beginning of Megan, not to jump right into it, but I mean, just the commercial parodies alone, it's like, oh, well, those are exquisite. Yeah. And it's truly the definition of like not getting caught trying to be funny. And that's what you want in a great horror comedy.
Absolutely. And one other thing I'll mention, and then we'll start getting into some puzzle pieces here, but the horror comedy as a genre feels so suited for a big full crowd at a theater, and like your film Werewolves Within, like I would have loved to see that with a big crowd, you know, and everybody just like cracking up, and I got that from Megan last week, and the whole audience just eating it up and laughing, and you know, it just makes for such a fun experience.
Yeah, truly. I agree. I mean, it's kind of the bummer about, you know, we did have a theatrical release for Werewolves, but it was really, I equate my going back to the theater being closer to like when Quiet Place 2 came out, which I think was a little later.
Sure.
I want to say it was like September or late summer. We were like June, July. And people were still a bit freaked out, but I think that's exactly the kind of sensibility people are looking for and looking to. I can't name what the project is, because I don't even know if it's going to go, but there was a pretty sizable financier studio that reached out to me just to see how fast I could write basically not a Megan adjacent film, but definitely a horror with, you know, like a big campy fun horror as sort of as quickly as possible, because I think these studios are starting to realize how bankable they are, and it is the bulletproof genre, because we want now an excuse after the, you know, garbage era of our last, you know, the last shadow of rule under this country, let's call it, and all of the bleak films that we really identified with, let's say, you know, Hereditary and Midsommar, the more intense kind of horror era, even Get Out, we all wanted something that kind of identified with our pain or our frustration or anger about the world. And now coming out of that cloud, we want something fun. So it's the bulletproof genre for the reason where it makes a great, like, bring your buddies out and watch a movie and laugh night, or a great date night. It actually is the thing that will get butts in seats, you know, at the Alamo Draft House or your local theater, because we want to have fun and it's safe to, for the most part, be in company again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sure our puzzle pieces list will have some very obvious ones, maybe some out there ones, but let's get it going. What do you have for your first puzzle piece as something you think might have inspired Megan?
Well, I didn't want to jump into Chucky right quick, because it would be the obvious, but I'll go a little more obscure. And this one kind of just came to me before we hopped on. I think there's some influence from the early kid killer, The Good Son. I'm going to go out there and say Macaulay Culkin, Elijah Woods, The Good Son, manipulative child killer movie.
Absolutely. That the scene in the forest when shit starts to finally go down here in Megan, like, absolutely feels like it's like, you know, explicitly referencing that. And that kid, great actor. I don't have that kid's name, but he really plays a little shit. And he's a perfect person for you to want Megan to go nuts on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that Brandon.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah, it's a great one to kick it off with. And, you know, you already mentioned Chucky. I guess I'll just make it my first one because I mean, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's child's play. I mean, it's child's play for a new generation. Obviously, we tried to do a remake reboot in 2019, which I didn't think was bad. I thought it had some great ideas. It had some really gnarly kills in it. It had certainly some solid things going on in it. It just didn't all kind of come together well. This almost, in a way, feels like a do-over. It feels like let's do Chucky with smart homes and all of these like AI assisted toys and things like that, and you know, and do that again. But this time, let's like make it really fun.
Yeah, I agree. I mean that's so kind of it's so inherent, and it's so fun, and just applying that. I mean, my wife's also a filmmaker. We're just kind of trying to play chemist and figure out what it is about this film, just in general, that is so tasty and is drawing us all in. And part of it too is like taking all of what you just said and applying it to the Zillennial kind of side eye. Zenfluencer or Zillennial fluencer, TikTok culture girl, and just the fact that it's just such a skewerable character and archetype for us, you know, comic minds and heads.
Absolutely, it's a very fertile ground to poke fun at, and it works really well with this character. But what do you have for your next piece?
Well, this is really going out on a limb here, but I think there is technically the easy route to go would be Invisible Man, you know, because there's tech and there's using tech for bad and that sort of thing. But I think I'm convinced that Gerard Dunstone saw Kevin Bacon in Hollow Man many years ago, and the other killer Invisible Man movie. And was influenced because you've got the robotics lab, the lab that's testing AI, like right on the edge of tomorrow, basically. Mm-hmm. And then that AI then used for bad. I thought for a moment maybe Allison Williams' character was going to go a little sinister.
Sure.
That would have been fun. She was kind of, I don't know if she was purposefully playing it kind of cold. She wasn't emoting quite much about her deceased sister. but I didn't know if that was like that was kind of going to happen. I appreciate they explained that they were kind of, or at least alluded to the fact they were kind of estranged. But yeah, I think there's some Hollow Man influence in there. I think there's like some Hollow Man influence in the lab and the like the tech heads kind of putting their heads together and deciding if, you know, this thing is good or bad or needs to be tested before it hits the masses.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't seen it in a while, and I remember loving it back when it came out in 2000. And it's one of those movies, though, that nowadays, like, people, like, kind of talk down about. And I don't know, Kevin Bacon rules, and I just thought it was a lot of fun when it came out.
Kevin Bacon rules, and... they do. I think he does put a dog in a microwave. So I think that might be why. That might be why people don't like super talk about it that much these days. I would revisit it. I remember being like gorier than it needed to be for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I will go with another Blumhouse film for my next piece here. I'm going to go Happy Death Day. Because I feel like what Christopher Landon did with slashers with Happy Death Day I feel like Megan is doing for killer doll movies. It's going, we already talked the PG-13 route. It's going more comedy than horror. It's just going for a fun, fast-paced, good time at the movies, more than really worrying about trying to be like a real hardcore, you know, killer horror film. And yeah, I think that works.
Yeah, a fun horror, fun slasher. I'm buddies with Michael Kennedy, who wrote Shrieky as well. Just kind of, nice. Again, just the team, anyone that can execute something that's legitimately funny and genuinely scary. I think Happy Death Day does lean more, I think slightly more to the horror than Freaky did, even though they're both, I would consider them both horror comedies. God, it just makes me appreciate Blumhouse that they get it. There are some people out there that are still like, well, we're not convinced that people want to see fun horror. And yeah, I get that. Like, I don't think Happy Death Day's sequel did as well as the first one, but people still want to go and have a good time. Like, you have to remember, like, Scream is one of the all-time, like, horror comedy bangers. I would absolutely consider it a horror comedy. It doesn't have to be scary movie to be both funny and scary, but it absolutely is.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does a really great job of taking in those horror influences, but than just, you know, wanting to be a good time, basically, first and foremost.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you have for your next piece?
Well, this is also going out on a real limb here, but do you remember a killer dog movie called Man's Best Friend with Lance Henriksen?
I have never seen that one. I recall it, though.
I'm really pulling out some weird ones today.
Nice. I like it.
It is truly like I haven't seen it in a long time, but it's basically like Terminator Cujo. I don't think the dog's a robot, but I think there was something that they like did to this dog. They were like intending to make it like a born ultimatum. Was it a Doberman? A Rottweiler. It was like a born ultimatum Rottweiler.
I think it was a Rottweiler. I think you're right.
Yes, and they were like testing on monkeys and testing on animals. It's a little Hollow Man adjacent, but the specific moment when the dog was actually dragged through the fence and Megan, and there was like the neighbor, you know, in Man's Best Friend that was like the junkyard guy who was abusive. There's always like, you know, that kind of that nasty neighbor character or that nasty person about town. Even as far back as like Silver Bullet, there's like, oh, the town had dropped, that guy's going to get beheaded.
Sure.
Well, then... In Man's Best Friend, it was like, you know, the nasty mailman with the mace and like the junkyard person. And this one, it's like that, you know, the nasty neighbor or the dog. And that gave me some Megan influences.
I love it. And I feel like I need to go on like a little mini marathon of just like either rewatches or watching for the first time all these like dog type movies. Like there's this one that was just recommended to me recently called Baxter, this foreign film that's supposed to be like absolutely bananas.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I need to start watching more of those because I'm a big dog guy, so I think that would be a fun little marathon for me to take up. But great piece. I'll go for my next one. This I feel like is another obvious one, but it needs to be said, and that is Alex Garland's Ex Machina. But you know, of course,
we've
got the, you know, the nature of AI going wrong, but then of course we also have dancing female killer robots. So there's a lot of visual cues here that we can really kind of take on.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. That was, God, that's a good one. You're making me think too. I don't want to jump immediately to my next one, but I'm just like the manipulative, I was trying to put my finger on like, what is it about this like manipulative, girl character? And I wonder if there's just something about like crush or single white female.
Ooh,
or even the hand that rocks the cradle, where there's just like, there's always that like slinky manipulative conversation, just like Megan has with, I guess it was Allison. Was it Allison Williams' character who was just like talking about death and just sort of like, basically like a, who are you going to believe kind of conversation. I just thought, I was like, what is it about? Is it Giallo? Is there something in the Argento Giallo world? And I think it's that like that era of you manipulative woman sociopath serial killer or like up and coming serial killer. They got me.
Yeah, that's great. I love it. That whole subgenre is great too. And I feel like that also influences like so many like Lifetime movies nowadays and stuff like that. And
oh my God, yeah.
You know, and you can really
adoption with Will Ferrell.
Yeah. Oh hell yeah, yeah. That all those kind of movies, they all deal with that of like, you know, like tongue in cheekily saying like, you know, you can't trust any of these women. And and of course Megan is that woman in that case. So that's great.
An era of films about dangerous women. Yeah,
absolutely. That's a good one. I'll go to South Park for my next piece here. You could take the movie or the show, but when Megan breaks in the song, that is such Cartman and Clyde Frog like singing to each other in their bed at night or something moment, or even like Towley or Mr. Hankey or something like that. And it's so pushing just over the line of absurdity. And that seems to be something Akilah Cooper like really loves doing.
Yeah, it's that was kind of amazing. I had to look right. I was excited to see in one of the recent interviews I read with Gerard Johnstone, we were talking about just how AI can, you know, it's like the chat GPT function, if you've messed around with that or any of these kind of these photo programs, you ask it to create a narrative, just like you could ask it to create lyrics for a song, and it's pulling together from all these disparate places.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, for the, there's a bedtime song. I want to feel like it's not that easy being green, or like whatever, you know, one of those songs that like Kermit might sing, you know.
Yeah.
Before bedtime, and he gave it to his music supervisor, his composer, and said, just kind of run with this sort of Disney, Jiminy Cricket, Kermit the Frog, AI bedtime tune. I mean, the Titanium moment alone, just separately, was so genius, but just the idea that's like almost perfect, an amalgamation of, you know, lullaby and it's gonna be okay lyrics just really, really tickled me. And I thought that was just so genius. So yes, I completely buy the South Park of it all, just being like also just geniusly, you know, musically inclined and composed show, and has been for years because those guys are musicians.
Yeah, absolutely. They write some like really funny and actually good songs. So it really all shines through. So yeah, absolutely. What do you have for your next piece?
Oh my God, I'm scraping my barrel here. I mean, I think just kind of circling back to that, this is what's so sad about my film knowledge is back to that like Giallo era. I think there's something about, this might be too obscure, but there's just something about that movie Phenomena, which was originally, I think, called Creepers.
Okay.
Starring Jennifer Connelly. Have you ever seen it? Let me just double check. I think it was called, Phenomena. It was by Argento, or at least the story was by Argento.
Directed by Argento.
Yes.
Yeah, I've never seen this one, actually.
It's a really, really obscure, as some of those movies tended to get, kind of film, but an eerie film, you know, where Suspiria might be more kind of on the nose. This is a story of a tale of a woman kind of going head to head with these witches in this kind of phantasmagoric way. Phenomena dealt with so many different elements in horror, from, I don't know, like a manipulative older man to a girl who can like communicate with bugs, to like a little boy held in a basement. I mean, there's just like so many different things they did in these horror movies, but there's just something about the eeriness of it and the, and I might be conflating this film with, this is so terrible. Eli Roth would be laughing in my face right now. It's like, basically like a Giallo era killer doll movie, or one of these types of films, like an Alice Sweet Alice, which is not technically Giallo, but where they'd be wearing these kind of masks, where a child would be saying kind of unusual and eerie things. Phenomena kind of summed up a very eerie, probably unintentionally farcical kind of tone that really, like the moments that made me think about that, or that like just kind of lit up my the Giallo board in my head, were pretty much any time Megan was talking through her artificial face and mouth, but her hair would be messed up. You're kind of chilled, but you're like, oh my God, it's like so is it like intentionally funny? Is it unintentionally funny? Did they know how funny it would be if they like fucked up her hair that much after the dog attack? I think they did.
Yeah, there's
just
sure.
stuff about that that, you know, I'm sure, I don't think Argento intended for some of what he did. They had all intended those movies to be operatic, but probably not like intentionally funny. And I think there was just something that was intentionally funny and yet treated with gravity the way that reminds me of that kind of that genre of film.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes me back though to Malignant, like defending it from people who thought it wasn't funny or wasn't meant to be funny at all. And I'm like, come on guys. Like it's so funny. Like how can you not laugh?
Yeah.
You know, I that's another mini marathon I need to go down, some of those Giallo films that I haven't seen, because I know like tone wise like they're all going to be things that I like really love, and I just haven't seen enough of them.
Yeah,
and it seems like it's like right up my alley of exactly what I need to go back and check out more of.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Great stuff there. I'm going to go with maybe an outside the box one here. I'm going to go with King Kong for my next puzzle piece.
Wow.
I mean, when we see the moment of Megan tied up and they're getting ready to display her as this big, you know, spectacle,
yes,
for
that's
everybody.
Right.
And you just know, like, I mean, not just because it's a horror movie and people are going to die, but you know shit's going to go bad when she breaks out of there. And
wow,
you know,
that's so well said.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's such a fun way to structure a unstoppable killer, to just tie him up for a little bit before they break out and kill people.
Yeah. Wow, that's absolutely right. I was trying to picture like what's another AI type film where they're sort of like tied up and things go bad, especially in the cold open,
mm-hmm.
which is very, very child's play. There was always like a factory scene.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in Child's Play 2 is that guy like unboxing the things in an apartment and just like bursting to life. But, you know, an origin scene, something kind of going off, but the AI tied up, King Kong tied up. That's an awesome comparison.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm glad you like that one. Do you have any other pieces you wanted to bring up?
Well, I think we've got to talk about Terminator, because that's
sure.
one that he's gone on record talking about. And that's just kind of a no brainer. I mean, it's like, it kind of makes me just wonder what the future of the Megan franchise, and there will be a franchise, is going to look like. Like if she's going to have like a group of Megans, a group mm-hmm. of other AI, if this group will be, if like, I guess, well, I don't want to give any spoilers about what happens to other employees at Funkey.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if they're going to kind of go that route. Made me love the Bruce scene so much that you actually got to see sort of a quote unquote good robot moment,
yeah.
which was just so awesome.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's killer AI. He's gone on record about it.
Yeah.
And, any Terminator, but a killer doll, or Terminator, but horror comedy, route in my mind is a win.
Absolutely. And with Bruce, you could bring in Aliens as well, which of course is so linked with the Terminator series.
Yeah.
But you know, but yeah, Terminator is absolutely has to be on the list. And I hadn't thought of this until right now, but how about Megan 2? Megan is the good guy this time, and we bring in
Ooh,
a more
hey.
Evil robot.
Yeah, competition.
Mm.
Competition is such a thing. That would be pretty that's
That'd be
actually
fun.
Genius. Yeah, it's like, what's the other competitive, like, it's like American Doll, like, Build-A-Bear. Is she going to have to go up against, like, another girl, or will it be, like, a cute Teddy Ruxpin? She'll just have to, like, contend with? Yeah, that's an amazing idea.
It's going to be great. I can't
wait. The possibilities are endless. I'm excited to see their gore-filled, unrated cut. I think that will do a lot. And
absolutely.
I think that would actually bring me back to the theater.
Yeah, I said the same thing. I will buy a second ticket. I'm on board to go see the unrated cut. So hopefully that happens.
Yeah,
it sounds like it might.
Yeah,
you know?
I hope so.
So my last piece, and I don't usually do this, but I'm going with a movie that's not out yet, because I wondered if this movie getting made and coming out in 2023 has anything to do with Greta Gerwig's Barbie that we're getting later this year. a little bit of counter programming in a way. You know, everybody mm-hmm. is excited about this movie and what Greta Gerwig's going to do with it, and what the tone is going to be. So let's make a fucked up horror version.
Oh yeah, completely. I sure hope they do. Maybe in another 20 years, first it'll just be like, let's introduce her to the world in this kind of subversion of the of expectations, and there'll probably be some awesome gender commentary through the Greta Gerwig lens and all. Yeah, I mean, that'd be incredible. It's like if there was a killer Chucky doll, like a killer Barbie doll. Come on.
Yeah, why not?
Killer
Absolutely.
Skipper.
Well, I'm going to list down all the movies we just talked about here for the finished puzzle. We talked about The Good Son, Child's Play, Invisible Man and Hollow Man, Happy Death Day, Man's Best Friend, Ex Machina, Crush, Single White Female, Hand That Rocks the Cradle, slash Lifetime movies, South Park, Phenomena, Alice Sweet Alice was in there as well, King Kong, Terminator, and Barbie.
Wow.
A lot of fun stuff in there. A lot of sci-fi AI gone wrong, as well as horror. Yeah, it's just such a fun, silly character to like make this kind of a horror movie with. Do you have any like closing thoughts? Anything we didn't quite get to while talking puzzle pieces here?
I don't think so. I think we covered the gamut. I'm just thrilled that it's outperforming and exceeding expectations. I hope
Yeah,
it busts down some doors.
absolutely. Especially for a January movie.
Yeah, completely, completely. And I think that's why they, that's typically why some studios will drop a film in the January months, right? Or in the January window as well. It's a risk. And look what's happening. People are getting their butts in seats, and that's like, as a filmmaker, like, it could make me happier.
Yeah, absolutely. My only other closing thought, the only thing we didn't really talk about, and nobody talked about, so I needed to give it a quick shout out. I couldn't even figure out what this guy's name was because it's such a small scene, but there's a detective who's in one scene and he almost steals the movie when
Oh my God,
he's
ridiculous.
questioning Alice Williams, and he says, "Sorry, I shouldn't laugh." Like when he laughs about Megan killing some kids. So funny, that line.
It's incredible. Yeah, he was like weirdly like a combination of a character from Ozark and like Twin Peaks or something. He
Sure.
was like just obviously chewing gum, just like the sleazy detective. Oh,
Yeah.
it was pretty incredible. I'm glad that he made it in there.
That's a great moment, man. So funny. Josh, this was great. Do you have another movie you watched recently that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
I saw Kevin Williamson's Sick, directed
Oh,
by
yeah.
John Hyams. They just dropped it or are about to drop it on Peacock, I believe. I saw it at Beyond Fest, and it was my absolute favorite watch. So I hope people won't write it off as a straightforward slasher. It's an incredible slasher, and I hope people watch it because I think it's phenomenal.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, I think it hits Peacock this weekend. And yeah, I'm sure it's going to be great. I can't wait. Yeah, so, I think, we basically covered Megan here. Is there anything you got coming up? Anything you want to plug or anything?
Yeah, I've got a graphic novel actually called Darla that I'm going to release this year that I'm super excited about. I should have
Nice.
some more information about that hopefully in the next couple months. But yeah, it's sort of an homage to Tales from the Crypt, to my
Yeah.
love of Tales from the Crypt and The Dead Zone even. It's a twisted little story just in graphic novel form. I hope people dig it. I'm not sure how folks are going to respond to it, but I had such a great time collaborating with Brianna Tippett. She was my illustrator, and it'll be released via Invader Comics this year.
Awesome. Where can people go to find out more about that and about your film work?
Well, I'm off Twitter now. I decided to leave the Musk hole, but maybe if he steps down, I'll come back. I was a little put off by the deplorables ball of people. He was just like, "You should come back and say slurs." So I'm in Instagram and Mastodon and Hive, and I'm still trying to figure out how the latter two work. But I have a website, joshsmindhouse.com, where people can go and just see or get just about anything.
Awesome. Well, Josh, thank you again so much for being here. This was a lot of fun, and maybe we'll be able to get you back again sometime.
Yeah, amen. That sounds great. Thanks for having me.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, and some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Megan. Thanks to Josh Rubin for joining me on that one. And thank you to everybody out there for listening. If you're enjoying what you hear here on Piecing It Together, make sure you're subscribed, and while you're subscribing, hitting that 5-star button would be very nice. We'd appreciate that. You could also, of course, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And check out our Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff over there, so check that out. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. And of course, you know, as long as you're just out there listening, we appreciate that too. You know, I'm going to give you guys a little peek behind the scenes on this one because the audio was a little funky on this recording and, you know, not every day you get Josh Rubin on your show, so I wanted to make sure it sounded good. I used this new Adobe Podcast speech enhancer thing, and the future's weird. You know, on a movie like Megan, it made sense to let you know about that I'm using this AI assistant thing to help enhance the audio, and it's crazy how good of a job it did. Usually I do all my editing myself, but it's pretty damn cool, but, you know, it's probably going to kill me at some point. So, anyway, yeah, just shout out to that, and, you know, whatever. Let's play a piece of music. How about that? Let's finish this up. I did just release a new album. More Content is the name of the album, my very tongue-in-cheek title for my new album, More Content. It came out on December 30th. It's available on a limited edition CD over on Bandcamp. That's davidrosen.bandcamp.com. It's also on all the streaming services, Spotify, Apple Music, all that. So if you got a playlist you want to add it to, you can listen to it that way. But yeah, it's been getting listened to by a lot more people than the last album, so I really appreciate everybody checking it out, and I appreciate all you for listening to the podcast. So let's close this episode with a piece of music from More Content. I'm going to go with a track called Trapped in the Beat, and yeah, we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.